This is for my ghetto motherfuckers.
Hot boy. Hey, hot are you really boy. A hot boy?
Hot boy.
Oh, check me.
Boy. What's your name? Cause I'm impressed. Can you treat me good? I won't settle for less. You a hot boy.
Hot boy.
A rock boy.
A rock boy.
A fun toy.
A fun toy.
Total Glock boy. Where you live? Is it by yourself? Can I move with you? Do you need some help? Cook boy,
I'll
give you more. I'm a fly girl, and I like those.
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Jordan.
And this is Desmond.
And welcome to episode 202 of Two Black Nerds.
Yeah.
That's right. It's that time once again for us to bring you our opinions and hot takes on all things fandom, pop culture, and entertainment. As always, you can find Two Black Nerds wherever you get your podcasts. Please make sure to hit that subscribe button and leave us a friendly rating and comment to show your support. And of course, join in on the conversation each and every week by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Two Black Nerds. We appreciate that. Love y'all. And let's not forget to mention, we have merchandise that's available now at twoblacknerds.com. Go check out our Two Black Jedi and Sith collections inspired by Star Wars. We got t-shirts, crew necks, hoodie stickers, mugs, and tote bags. So go ahead and place those orders right now. On today's show, we'll be reviewing the latest episode of the Marvel Studios original series, Loki. We'll discuss all of the key moments and events that occurred, as well as how this episode will impact the rest of the series. But before we get to any and all of that, we're kicking off this week's podcast with a discussion about a recent report that details some major changes coming to Marvel Television. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if listeners know this or not, but shameless plug is coming. We have a two-part episode that details the state of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You got to go check that out right now if you already haven't. But the reason I bring that up is because we dedicated an entire segment to talking about some of the challenges that were revolving around Marvel Television and their transition to streaming, mm-hmm. a lot of these Disney Plus shows that just have not worked for us, frankly. And funnily enough, the timing has been somewhat apropos, I would say, because recently an article in The Hollywood Reporter by Boris Kidd, he put together a great article about some very, very significant changes that will be coming to Marvel's TV division, not only with some upcoming specific shows, but really with their entire philosophy. There's a lot to get through with this article. There's a couple of key things that I think we have to, you know, sort of detail and break down. So let's just kind of go section by section and talk about this and share our thoughts and reactions to this news, because it is quite significant here. The first major thing that this article really details is the updates around Daredevil Born Again. Now, mm-hmm. I think we all know that that's an incredibly important show that's going to be coming out within the next couple of years at this point. But one of the things that was noted is that before the writers and actor strike started, fewer than half of the series' 18 episodes had been shot. Mm. But from what the Marvel executives had seen up until this point, they weren't pleased. It was not a show that was working. And notably, Kevin Feige was just not pleased at the overall development of how this show was moving and all the stuff that they had gathered up until this point. And so quietly in September, Marvel had let go all of the series writers and directors, including Chris Ord and Matt Corman, who were sort of operating as the head writers for this series. And they are essentially undergoing a creative reboot. They're kind of scrapping most of what they've gotten and plan to start from scratch, almost essentially. They did know in this article that they will keep some things that have been shot will eventually transfer over, but they're really looking to remake this entire show, and the studio currently is on the hunt for new writers and new directors to come on and helm the project. But from what they had seen and the footage that they had captured in the episodes that they shot, apparently Chris Ord and Matt Corman had kind of crafted a legal procedural that didn't look anything like the Netflix version of the series that we saw all those years ago, those three seasons, which, you know, is notably known for its violence, its mm-hmm. maturity, its action. Apparently, none of that was there. And also what this article outlines is that Charlie Cox, who plays Matt Murdock, a.k.a. Daredevil, apparently was not going to don the costume until the fourth episode. Jeez. So we're going quite an extensive amount of time without even seeing him suit up as the Daredevil, you know, sort of character that we've come to know and love him as. And so, mm-hmm. again, Daredevil Born Again, it's almost kind of going back to the drawing board, which is it's becoming a bit of a consistent thing that we've seen across a few of these projects lately. We know Blade has had some similar redevelopment. Secret Invasion underwent a lot of redevelopment over the course of the multiple years that they crafted that show. How does this make you feel? Obviously, there's more, there's bigger context with Marvel TV, but with Daredevil specifically, as anticipated of a show that is, how does this make you feel that they have seen what they have, they decided that it wasn't working, and now they're just going to go back to square one?
Man, it's so interesting because part of me feels like this is a good thing in a lot of different ways, right? Where I wish Marvel had done this more often, or else our State of the MCU pod may not have been necessary. But there is, I think, a level here that's like, man, y'all have how many they have? You said not even 8 episodes, right? Of an 18 episode show. I mean, if the first 7, you watch it and you go, dang, it ain't working. I mean, I can't possibly continue with the rest of the 10, 11 episodes that need to be done. And I think that's a smart decision on Marvel's part not to force that, right? It feels like some of these other projects, that could have even been the case, but they had to, well, we got to finish it out. Well, we have to do this and do that. And so part of me feels like this is a good thing. If they feel like it's not good, scrap it and try again. Again, unfortunately, it doesn't always work like that, right? Unfortunately, everybody doesn't always get that opportunity. But it sounds like, look, it sounds like to me Daredevil is one of the babies they're trying to take care of right now, right? I always talk about Iron Man, Captain America, Spider-Man. These are all characters. I always feel like they're like, they know they have to take care of. And it feels like, from my point of view, that Daredevil has become that character. And Kevin Feige's like, look, if we're not shepherding Daredevil in right, then this thing can't work. This is not going to work. And I feel like they've seen that, and it's like, nah, we got to try again. Let's try this again. Let's get this right. I actually really like that energy. Another thing that comes out of this that I'm actually happy to hear about is them actively saying it doesn't feel like Netflix, something's not right. Yes, like hell yes. What? That's like, it should be music to everybody's ears to me that, like, because everybody has been worried about the tone that Kevin Feige, about the MCU that we're looking for in order to shepherd in Daredevil into this specific universe. We were all afraid that it would not fit Netflix, that it would be too childish, that it would be too funny MCU, whatever weird tonality going on here coming into Daredevil. But them saying, ooh, these episodes don't resemble the Netflix version at all, and then kind of, you know, not being okay with that, that feels like also like a good thing to me. It feels like they're also like, okay, let's get this character back to where they need to be in order for us to feel good about it, for people to say, oh, Charlie Cox is on screen, this feels like the Daredevil I know. Not only that, but Born Again is a big story. That's a thing that if it doesn't feel like that, I'm not sure it'll work, because it's so dark and so gruesome. I'm not sure it'll work. So that's also good news to me as well. What I am worried about is the push and pull of writers in MCU currently. There's a lot of firing of directors and writers and all these other things. Why aren't we getting it right the first time? That's the other thing I'm worried about now. Why do we constantly have to get new writers? It happened with Blade. Why do we have to get new directors? Why are we missing the mark the first time? I think is my worry, because this didn't happen that much in the first couple phases, right? Like, it was like, oh, blah, blah, blah's writing it, blah, blah, blah's directing it. And then it happens. Oh, it's a good movie. Cool. What is happening now recently that's making Marvel hire, again, certain writers, certain directors? They go on for a little bit. Marvel's like, ooh, I don't know about this. That's not working. And then they scrap it. What's wrong with their procedure that's getting us to this point to, again, even have this conversation of letting people go with 7-8 episodes in the bank? We shouldn't have even got this far. You know what I mean? And so I don't know, man. That's another thing I'm worried about. But again, I think I like this idea of Marvel finally somewhat being self-aware, finally vetting some of those ideas with in-house, watching a couple episodes before continuing the rest of the season, and then being able to make decisions based on the future of a franchise. Daredevil's big, man, and I think they realize that. So, like, I know a lot of thoughts there, but man, it's kind of bittersweet in a lot of those ways.
Yeah, I think Daredevil is the one unique proposition in this whole television experiment that they've been doing for the past couple of years, in so far as that there is a series that we already have a template for. Mm-hmm. None of these other characters like Ms. Marvel or Loki or She-Hulk had a series beforehand. So they're starting from scratch. They're building it from the ground up as much as they have done with their previous projects. Obviously, the comics and adaptations are there, but we've never seen anything like those shows in live action. Right. Daredevil, we have three high quality productions, great seasons of television mm-hmm. that are mostly beloved. And so now they're picking up the baton, and it's supposed to be a soft reboot, but they haven't really clarified that. We don't really know how Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio are going to fit into this larger multiverse plan, or if it's the same interpretations of the characters from Netflix. Like, we don't have any of those answers. And so the expectations and the anticipation level for that show is obviously high, because so many people wanted those characters to come back. And Charlie Cox, Vincent D'Onofrio, John Bernthal, whoever you want to name as a part of that cast, they were so pitch perfect that we just wanted them back, and we wanted the shows back. We didn't want them to change. And obviously Marvel and Disney, they have to do things differently. It's not going to be a one-for-one comparison to what we got. But as you're filming, if you see that you are not capturing the essence of it, if you're not capturing the spirit of what those shows were, then you are already failing. And I think you're already starting to work from behind, because people are probably going to reject it, because those shows are, they're so beloved, and people still go back to rewatch them and enjoy them. And so I agree that I am glad that we are taking this opportunity to step back and try to improve it. That doesn't guarantee that it's going to be great. They can redo it over and over, and it could still turn out to be shit. That is very likely a possibility, but I am at least, I think, pleased to hear that they are starting to look at things and to really assess, like, we're not hitting the mark that we need to hit. And this is a heavy hitter. There's a lot behind this. There are incredibly high expectations. We got to do what we can to try to make it right. Even if we can't completely remedy everything that's been shot, some things we'll have to use and bring over, but we got a clean house. And so a part of it is like, okay, you know, they are trying to take care of it, but this is going to become an incredibly expensive television show. Like, yeah. That is going to be just like an astronomical price tag to do all of this work, because you're also hiring essentially an entirely new staff. And to get to your question about what's happening here, why are we making it this far to, you know, have these creatives and these filmmakers on and finally have this realization that it's not working, I think this next section kind of speaks to that. But what I also want to allude to before we get to that stuff with the whole philosophy of Marvel TV, I think honestly, they've just been for a long time, especially on the TV side of things, they've been hiring people that are underqualified. That's just the reality of it. And that's not to take a shot at anybody that's working on that stuff. Like, mm-hmm. these people have credit. They've been working in the industry. But when you're talking about big budget, effects laden type of work that's all being shot and produced at one time, yeah. that's also not being shot and produced historically like television has for the past 7 decades, mm-hmm. you're asking a lot of a person to make that transition, because these people probably have worked on TV shows that operate more like traditional TV in the past. But now you're bringing them over to this Marvel house style, to this Disney juggernaut, and they're dealing with all of these different departments, probably thousands of people, all the effects houses, all the people internally. It's a lot of anybody. And if you're bringing on people like Chris Ord and Matt Corman, who just quite honestly haven't been working all that long, they have credits, but we're talking about, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of experience. Mm-hmm. Is that really enough to be shepherding something of this magnitude across the finish line? Yeah. I don't know. And I think that Marvel historically is like to hire people that have come from independent backgrounds, or maybe they have like one or two things under their belt before they take on a big Marvel project. That's mm-hmm. largely worked with the film stuff. They've been able to achieve that. You look at Taika Waititi, you look at Ryan Coogler, you look right. at those directors who didn't have a ton beforehand. They come over to the film side and it works. It does do well. TV, entirely different machine. And I think we're starting to see that you probably can't operate under that same type of philosophy mm-hmm. and expect the same results, which leads us to really, I think, the key thing about this article that Boris Kitt wrote, which is like the most eye-opening piece of it, even more so than the Daredevil Born Again stuff, because we were just speaking about all of this stuff. And again, it is that change in philosophy, apparently, for Marvel Studios. One of the things that I think we long suspected, we kind of knew, but this article really just kind of confirmed all of our suspicions, is that all up until this point, for the past 3 years, all 9, 10, 11 shows, however many it is that they've been making, you know, this company, Marvel Studios, they weren't commissioning pilots, which has been done in television for, again, I think 70 years, you know. Instead, they are shooting these things all at once. Most of these productions cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $150 million to $200 million. They're shooting them like they're movies and essentially cutting them up to be six hour episodes of television. And also, there weren't showrunners, which historically, for the better part of 30 or 40 years, showrunners has been a true sort of staple of television. Like directors are for film, showrunners are for TV. But Marvel, they weren't hiring showrunners, and instead they depended on their film executives in-house to run their series, very much like they do with their movies. And it also, you know, as a company, heavily relied on the post-production process and reshoots and pickups to kind of fix things that weren't working. If they saw that things weren't, you know, going the way that they planned, then they would obviously fit in and schedule in those reshoots and pickups. We saw Secret Invasion went through a lot of that. There were months and months of pickups. And this article also talks about the battleground essentially that was kind of drawn on Secret Invasion, some of the arguments that happened that led to just the creative differences on that show. And there's a quote here that I want to read before I get your thoughts, but it comes from Brad Winterbaum, who's currently, you know, sort of the head of streaming television and animation. He says, quote, "We're trying to marry the Marvel culture with the traditional television culture. It comes down to how can we tell stories in television that honor what's so great about the source material," end quote. So, again, that comes from Brad Winterbaum, who is leading pretty much their streaming and television operations over there. But yeah, what do you think about all of this? What do you think about just seeing, again, I think our suspicions confirm that they just haven't been making TV like TV has been made, a proven tried and true strategy that's worked for, again, like 70 years. They've decided to just not do that and instead try to shoot things like movies and see if that process would work. And I think by and large, we can both agree that it just has not worked up until this point.
Yeah, it's just... sometimes you don't listen and then you get hit upside the head and then you start listening. And I think that's what Marvel's doing, man. I still feel like it was a little bit of cockiness on their part to not just be like students of TV when it was time to make TV. They felt like it really was the opposite. They're like, "All right, we're Marvel. We'll make a movie and cut it up and call it a TV show." And that's exactly what we got. And again, it's funny because in this, what I would call success stories of WandaVision and Loki, specifically WandaVision, it started out giving homage to TV. And that's part of the reason why it was working, because they had to make episodes in their actual TV show.
The irony in that, right?
The irony in that. And so it's, I think it's really funny, man, that unfortunately it took long, but again, this is still to me good news. It'd be different if they were like, no, six episodes for the rest of forever of Marvel TV shows. But they're finally addressing this stuff. We've already addressed this stuff again in everything. I literally just talked about showrunners, which is really funny. But I have to say this is good news, man. I think I'm excited to hopefully see real change, because Marvel has said a couple things, or we've even talked about how they seem to be self-aware sometimes and then they turn around and do the same thing couple seconds later. Fortunately, this does feel more like a straightforward way to really put your heart on your sleeve as Marvel, right? And say, look, this is where our problems before. We weren't having pilots. We weren't having showrunners. We weren't doing all these things. And coming out and saying, okay, we're going to fix these things. And like, I really like the idea of marrying Marvel culture with traditional television culture. Again, I wish this happened a long time ago. It should be in day one. We're making Marvel TV shows, put the post-it note on the board, marry the two cultures. But instead, it took us years to get here. But better late than never, man. And I really hope that this goes somewhere.
Yeah, I think honestly, if we rewind the clock a little bit, a part of the blame here has to be placed on the leaders over at Disney who were in charge over Kevin Feige, because we can't forget that once Disney Plus launched, all of a sudden, all the companies within Disney, Marvel, Lucasfilm, Animation, Pixar, they all had a mandate to create quote unquote content for Disney Plus. They had to create a ton of new stuff. And that would require you to really start to ramp up production on many projects that probably weren't ready that you were intending to make, but you didn't exactly figure out the formula. You didn't exactly iron out your strategy to get them ready to go. You know, I think that the turnaround time on this stuff, like we found out about Disney Plus publicly, and then it launched in a very short time frame. It wasn't like this long lead time. We didn't know about Disney Plus for 5 years. We suspected eventually Disney would launch its own streaming service, but it was a pretty quick thing. It was Bob Iger's sort of final swan song before he retired. Obviously, he came back, but then you all of a sudden require all of your creatives, all of your divisions to say like, yeah, now you're going to go from 3 movies a year to 3 movies a year plus 4 to 5 television shows a year. That is ridiculous. You are more than doubling your creative output. You're more than doubling the resources that you have to inject into all of these different productions. That is just, it's crazy. It's really crazy to think about. And so while obviously, yes, I think some of the blame is put on Marvel because execution is a part of the formula at the end of the day. And we've seen the challenges and we've seen the stuff that went on behind the scenes with Secret Invasion and She-Hulk had replacements and Moon Knight had its stuff. All of these things could, you know, ultimately be avoided with better planning and a better strategy. But it is good news. I do agree. It's just one of those things where it's like, man, I don't know why this light bulb didn't go off to begin exactly. with. You know, why was the hubris yep. so present to such a degree to think that you can just film things like you've been filming them for an entirely different medium? It just doesn't work that way. We've seen television has worked the way that it's worked for a very long time now. Like, there's no need to change it. It ain't broke. Like, it's there. Right. And the fact that they decided to not have a writer's focused approach to any mm-hmm. of this stuff, it's so strange to me. You know, you can't just have the executives who've been there working on movies for 10 plus years all of a sudden figure out TV. And this article also notes that they do plan to hire TV specific executives. I know you noted that when we talked about the state of the MCU, you said there needs to be a Kevin Feige for movies and there needs to be a Kevin Feige for TV.
That's it.
And that's what they're going to do. They're going to hire TV specific executives. We should have done that from the get-go. Yeah. They are going to have showrunners. We should have done that from the get-go, but that is a good thing that we are eventually going to get to that place. But it's kind of mind-boggling that a company so large and so adept at making such great stuff as Disney and as Marvel, I mean, even till this point, 3 years into the game with this TV and streaming stuff, like, it took this long. But the Secret Invasion debacle, I think, was probably the camel or the straw that broke the camel's back, along with, you know, seeing that Daredevil's not working because, you know, we all know that became like the worst review anything in the MCU. And you never want that associated with your brand. Last quick piece of news I want to get to. This is related to TV, but it was also outside of this article. I think it was broken by the direct. Apparently, the Ironheart series has been pushed back significantly to 2025. They essentially found sort of the copyright that had been sort of issued out by Disney and Marvel, which has now a new release date of September 2025. We know that series was initially supposed to come out literally this year. Like, it was going to come out this fall, essentially a year after the character of Riri Williams made her debut in Black Panther Wakanda Forever last year. We heard earlier this year that it was going to get pushed back outside of 2023, but now it's going to ultimately result in more than a 2-year delay. How does that make you feel? I think, you know, sort of in connection to all this other news, to know that, you know, it's just going to be a long time before we see that character.
Man, I don't care when it comes out as long as it comes out right, to be honest. You know how I feel. Get Riri right and I'm good. It doesn't have to be next week. It doesn't have to be tomorrow. But when it does come out, as long as they do it right, as long as they take their own advice and they do the best that they can actually do, I really have no complaints with Ironheart getting pushed back at all. Again, you could worry about maybe Dominique Thorne getting older, but she's a black woman in her 20s. I'm not worried about what she's going to look like at all, even. So I have no qualms with this at all.
Yeah, and they already filmed a lot of it too. So whatever pickups they do, you know, it's probably going to be minimal. They have filmed most of the show. They completed principal mm-hmm. photography. So it's going to just kind of sit there yep. for a while. I mean, you know, a part of me is, you know, thinking like, well, you know, they're pushing it back because we've heard Bob Iger and Kevin Feige talk about, you know, slowing down, taking their time between projects, which I do think is a good thing. We kind of need less of this stuff. But also, man, it's a slippery slope too, because again, like, what where are we going with all of this stuff? Mm-hmm. Like, when we talk about the Avengers movies that's supposed to wrap up everything, well, what's Ironheart's place, if any, in this that's whole true. Equation if her series is going to come out mere months before the Avengers movie? Like, is that the best sort of situation for her? Mm-hmm. I don't know, because we don't know what her role will be in that movie, right, if she even has a role. And I could be, you know, very much getting ahead of myself. So in theory, I'm fine with it as long as it is good. But at the same time, it does just raise more questions about seeing any of this stuff. Like, I think we're existing in a place now where it's becoming a little bit more and more likely that certain things might not come out. You know, I was listening to the Watch podcast, and Joanna Robinson, she has a new book out, MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios. I'm like nearly done with it right now. It's super, super good. But she talked about how she has heard this can't be confirmed, but she has heard that the Wonder Man project that was rumored has been disregarded. It's been trashed. Mm-hmm. That it's not going to happen. And I'm just kind of worried that might become more of a reality now than it has been in the past. Usually Marvel projects, like, they always happen if they're usually announced. There's been like two examples where it's like, oh, that didn't come out, like Inhumans. That was like the one thing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, when they announce something, it makes its way out. So, you know, last thing I'll just ask you, like, does that, even though like we know that it's been filmed, like, you think we might get a Batgirl situation on our hands? Like, is it at all possible that we just might not see this, just all these delays, all these changes in their formula? Like, does that worry you at all? That's potentially, you know, sort of a possibility at play.
I think it's a small possibility. I don't think it's like Batgirl level possibilities. Because like you said, Prince Photography is already wrapped up. I feel like they feel okay about the show. I think the piece of that you were speaking to of where does Ironheart fit into all this, right? I think that's the piece that does worry me a little bit. Could if it was to get scrapped, of like, oh, they could... They're probably restructuring as we speak, right? Just the MCU in general. Everybody's trying to figure out what's going on over there. They could easily be like, uh-oh, Riri may not fit into the story how we thought we were going to fit into it. Let's get her out of here. And unfortunately, that definitely is a possibility. It doesn't happen often, like you said, but these next couple years between, again, writer strikes and the restructuring of Marvel, it's all scary. You never know what's going to happen. In fact, Batgirl, to me, scared the hell out of me in general. I don't know what... I don't know what is right anymore. Like, I know I can't bet anything is coming out until I'm sitting down watching it. Like, it's the only time that I know something's going to happen. And so I think the possibility is there. But I do think her making an appearance in at least, you know, Wakanda Forever and them even telling us that Ironheart's being pushed back, it does give me faith that all of this is still going to happen in the Ironheart court. But nothing's out of the realm of possibility anymore.
Yeah, very true. And I also wonder about the Armor Wars connections. Like, now that's going to be a movie. Apparently, there will be tie-in between her character and Don Cheadle's Rhodey. Will Armor Wars come out before Ironheart? Will it closely coincide? Might they release in the same year? A lot of questions at play that we will have to stick by and see. But with all of that out the way, let's get to the reason why we're here and talk about the latest episode of the Marvel Studios original series, episode 2 of Loki, just recently premiered. It's entitled Breaking Brad. And of course, last week we talked about the season 2 premiere of Loki, which is notably the only second season of a Marvel television show at this point. So it was a little bit of a weird experience, I think, to even talk about a show that's been on and now we're coming back and reviewing it again. We haven't had that experience yet, but I think we both walked away feeling very optimistic about the rest of the series, feeling really good about what they did with the premiere, the character introductions, the new locations, and obviously the story that they're setting up here. So before we dive into spoilers, before we talk about all the specific details with this week's episode of Loki, I just want to pass it over to you, man, to get your general big picture thoughts. What did you think about episode 2 of season 2 of Loki?
I think this was another solid episode of Loki, man. I don't think it had quite that energy that the first episode came in with, nor did I technically really expect it to. But man, I definitely enjoyed this episode. This episode has a couple things that I really like in it, even that the first one didn't have, dealing with some kind of some dark undertones and some of those things. But man, I think it moved the story forward. And I think, you know, again, the only thing I would also kind of put against it a little bit is the pacing a little bit was a little like, uh-oh, where are we going here? Are we going here? Are we going there? But other than that, man, everything that transpired, I still love the way it looks. I think the acting in this episode was absolutely superb, specifically Rafael Casale. And like, I think they're still on to something here. So they still got me. I think episode 2 was good, and I don't have too many complaints. Just simply not as good as the first.
I'm largely in the same spot as you. Episode 2 was very enjoyable for me. I liked it a lot. It's not quite as good as the first one, but when you start off in such a high octane way as that season 2 premiere did, it's hard to keep up that same momentum. But apparently the rest of the season probably will, at least from what we're hearing. But I think episode 2 is a great scene setter in terms of introducing some of these new characters, really spending time with them, most notably the Brad Wolf character, understanding some motivations, peeling back additional layers to certain characters that we have long been associated with now, whether it's Loki or Mobius himself, and just adding more layers of depth to their characters, which I think is going to pay off in really, really big ways in the rest of the season. And I love what they did with that stuff and just those small, quiet moments, those conversations, and really allowing the opportunity for Rafael Casal to kind of shine and kind of steal a couple of scenes. He was really, really good here as well. Yeah. I also liked Wumi Musaku and also Sofia DiMartino coming back here, you know, with sort of a bigger presence, as we saw her briefly in last week's episode. Definitely had a bigger presence in this week's episode as well. And so the character work here, I think, is like what shines the most, like just having the opportunity to take a beat really quickly and then sort of assess how people are feeling, understand them a little bit better, because we do have to start to land the plane on these arcs. Like if this is possibly the last season of Loki, you know, we don't really know. We don't know what that might look like, or if they're going to springboard into Avengers or whatever the case may be. I think that they're doing a lot of really good work to get us to that place. So I really enjoyed it. I think it was a solid and strong episode, and it has me super excited for next week as well, just because I think that now that we've done this one, I think the rest of the series is just going to be moving at like 90 miles an hour. I think we're just going to be moving really quick. There's going to be so much happening, so much thrown at us. So I think that this one was kind of the necessary, I don't want to say pause, but it definitely slowed the momentum. But I think it was kind of a key thing for them to do, because they know that it's going to be a very fast paced, very high octane season. But with all of that out the way, let's get into spoilers. If you've not seen episode 2 of Loki season 2, go check that out on Disney Plus and come back and finish out the rest of our conversation. And we, of course, have to start off with the way that this episode started, which is in the past. We go back to 1977, and we get to see Brad Wolf, played by Rafael Casal, at a movie premiere, essentially. Now, we know that Brad Wolf in the TVA is a hunter. He's Hunter X5, and we initially met him in last week's episode, but he has sort of diverged from his responsibilities at the TVA and has now ended up in London in 1977. He's still on the Sacred Timeline, but he's acting as a film actor, and basically Loki and Mobius are looking for him because they need more information about Sylvie's whereabouts. They find him, and then ensues a chase between Loki and Brad, and we get a really, really interesting and cool sequence in this particular set piece where we get to see Loki uses powers, which I didn't realize and recognize how long it's kind of been since we've actively seen him use his powers in the way that he did. Obviously, he's a god. He's the god of mischief. But because he was in the TVA all this time, powers don't work there. And we can't see him flex those muscles. But we got to see him bust out all of that stuff that just makes him who he is and kind of tap into that villainy that we've come to associate with that character. So what did you think about just the whole setup of this episode? The fact that we were in the past, we got to see Rafael Casal act like this movie star, Brad Wolf. Mm-hmm. There's comic connections there, of course. And then, of course, the interactions between Loki and Brad once he ultimately chased him and basically revealed to him, like, yeah, man, you can't match up to me because I'm the god of mischief. I can do whatever I want with you at this point.
Man, I thought it was super fun across the board. Like, this dude, Rafael Casal, man, really, I think, He's so talented that, like, I feel like he's been a character for a long time, if that makes sense. Like, I'm literally watching the show like, this dude, he wasn't in season one. Like, it just feels like he was already part of the cast. And so it was really cool going back in time and seeing him just be Brad Wolf and own that and really, really be this, like, very questionable character, man. And we have no idea what he really has going on or what he wants. But it's really what is really interesting about his character is there's so much, I think, through line in the overarching story of wanting to know your life on the timeline and wanting to know, you know, what's going on with the other branching timelines. He actually has a lot to his character to explore, which is interesting. But again, I really love the time travel of this. I really like how it looks back here in 1977 and in these all these movie things going on. If you look in the back, you can see a Kingo poster. So, you know, they haven't forgot about the Eternals. We still here. The Eternals are still here. But man, this interrogation scene, bro, where like you said, Loki is finally chasing him down, using his powers. I just remember being like, there was a moment I was like, Loki, why aren't you? I actually had a realization, like, why aren't you using your powers right here? And then he uses them as soon as I said something. I was like, what's going on? You're like, this should be easy for you. And so I love that they were finally able to display Loki's powers. But I also love how Loki felt. I don't know. There's a moment in these shows, right, where you do feel like Loki is slowly becoming a hero. And then in this interrogation chase scene, you're like, oh no, this dude's still dark. Like, this dude is still hella scary. The shadows on the wall with the horns coming, the Loki horns coming out. I was like, oh man, no, this dude, he could still do some crazy stuff. And so it's interesting that they really harped on that for the rest of the episode. But it has me thinking again of like the spectrum of anti-hero-ness that Loki fits on at this point, right? Of course, he was indeed a villain, but seeing this again, this chase down and being like, no, this dude is capable of a lot of stuff still, and he's still really scary. I think is really interesting, but cool sequence overall. I really enjoyed it, man. Again, I really enjoyed the darkness. I like the chase, and I really like everything going on with that scene, man. I hope they continue to do a lot of cool time travel stuff here, which we know they will, of course. But being specific to certain times of I think just culture, I think is interesting in paying attention to those kind of small details.
Yeah, I mean, becoming a time travel show is probably one of the most fun aspects that they can really lean into with this season in particular, because that's just going to keep up the momentum and keep up the sort of kinetic pace that they've established. And you get to just see Brad Wolf here living his best life. I equate it to the fact that it's like Joe Pantoliano in The Matrix, you know, who played Cypher, who did not want to exist in the real world. He wanted to figure out a way to get back to the fake reality, the Matrix that had been created. He was like, I want the steak, man. I don't want to live this fucking real life and eat that shit that we eat every day. And like, this is, I think, kind of another example of that, where you see these TVA employees who all of a sudden become enlightened, and then they now know and realize like, well, wait a second, my life has not been what I thought it's been. Let's go see what the real world has for me. And for Brad Wolf in particular, it has, I think, significantly better returns for him. He gets to just go make movies, be a movie star. Again, they're tying this into the comics, you know, and Brad Wolf, he plays, you know, a slasher serial killer in a movie, but then he ends up becoming that exact character in the comics. I think it's called Zaniac or something. So I don't know if they'll go that far. I think it might just be like a cool nod, but that's one of the cases where it's like, man, this guy has a really good life. He doesn't want to go back to his old life. And we see that reflected in Mobius later. And we'll talk about, you know, sort of his experience with knowing his true reality and what his true purpose is compared to his life in the TVA. And then on the opposite side of that, to see Loki, you know, be in pursuit of this guy and to bust out those shadows and to shapeshift and to create copies, and the crown comes and all of that stuff. I mean, this entire series has been about just the dichotomy between Loki's just shades of who he is, between him being a villain and a hero, and his journey to becoming a hero. And I think that's why we root for him so much, because he is so complex. He is so intricate with every movement, because you never really know where he's going to go with that stuff. And he can be dark at one moment, but then at the very next moment, he's doing probably the most heroic thing ever, or he might do the most romantic thing ever, as we saw with his interactions with Sylvie. So there's a lot of great stuff there that they're setting up, and that they obviously pay off later in this episode. I do want to quickly talk about, there's this moment back at the TVA that kind of had me realizing, you know, sort of what I think we're setting up here. And it's before we get to the interrogation, really, but you see Loki, Mobius, Hunter, Hunter X, is it X-15? Wumi Musaku?
B.
I can't, B-15. It's so many damn numbers
so
and letters
many
at this
numbers
point.
And letters, yeah.
But it's them three, and it's also Casey, who is, I think, having a much more prominent role now in this show. And what I'm starting to notice is that in the TVA, like, these are like our core characters, along with OB. Like, these five are really the five that are kind of leading this resistance against, you know, just everything that's happening. They are like operating within good spirits of trying to make sure that the TVA is going to be the line of defense against whatever comes from Kang, whenever he does come. What do you think about, you know, just sort of this group, you know, that's been assembled amongst these five? And there's also that really cool interaction later in the episode between Casey and OB, where Casey realized that he met the guy who wrote the TVA handbook. Yeah. He's like, wait a second, you're Ouroboros? You wrote the TVA handbook. I'm such a big fan. And they're both incredibly smart, but it was like a really cool moment to get to see them fan out. So I think it's still early. We'll probably see them come together a little bit more officially later. But what do you think about just sort of the different parts of that? You know, the fact that we got Mobius and Loki, and then we got Hunter B-15, and now Casey's coming into the fold. And obviously Ouroboros makes up a really important part of the whole equation.
Yeah, I just really like this one person isn't about to save all kind of thing here, which is definitely could be, right? You could easily be like, oh, titular character Loki is the hero for everybody and just go with that. But that's not the reality we have. The reality we have is that the TVA is this giant organization with 1,000 people. It's going to take a little bit more than just Loki to save the universe here. So I love that they're ingesting characters into, again, what feels like a makeshift team, people that literally have to come together to save lives. And I think they're doing it in a way. I just love how diverse everybody is, man. It's like a black woman, a god of mischief, an Asian dude, two Asian dudes, I guess. I don't know what Casey is technically. I have no idea what Casey is. But you know what I mean? I just really love how diverse this cast of people is. And they're all very charismatic and they're all really funny too. But I love how they're slowly coming together in what feels like a team, because I think that will all pay off later down the line. And so I also love how, again, I feel like OB and Casey will have their place, just like I was kind of talking about last week, how it feels like B-15 is going to have to lead a charge, right? And I feel like, man, if Casey got the upstairs and OB got the downstairs, you know what I mean? And she can help facilitate that way. And then again, Mobius and Loki have to be out in the field chasing people and do what they need to do. It just feels like the team is coming together. It's taken a couple episodes, but the team is coming together, and I can't wait to see. I think how they branch that out. But then my favorite part of OB and Casey meeting each other is Casey is like, "Can you sign my manual?" I was like, "This is the nerdiest thing I have ever heard. Is can you sign my TVA manual?" But it makes sense, and I love how they're nerding out over TVA stuff. Because again, to be honest, one of the things that's not working out so well is the flux arc, right? Kind of this time arc that's coming. It's not that the arc's not working, it's that the explanation of what's going on isn't as seamless as it used to be, because there's still no missed minutes. And I kind of talked about that last week, as it feels like OB might have to be that now. But now also it feels like Casey might be part of that. It feels like it may not be just on OB. It feels like maybe OB and Casey can both try to fill that void of explanation that is left by Miss Minutes being with Renslayer. So hopefully that also becomes the case as, again, Casey becomes more and more frequent in the show.
Yeah, the temporal aura stuff is still, I'm just out on that at this point. It's still not just working for me, unless they can come up with a way to really engage me and entice me. Like, I know it's a ticking time clock device, essentially. Like, that's what we're operating against. And ultimately, that's really all that matters beyond the specifics of it. But with this team, you know, that's coming together, it's cool because they all serve very specific functions. You know, Hunter B-15, obviously, she comes from a very specific sort of set of skills and a background. She can provide insight that nobody else can. Mobius obviously has been a leader at the TVA for such a long time. Loki, with all of his tricks and his wit and just his knowledge of people. And of course, Sylvie and his relationship with her and what he saw at the end of time is crucial to all of this. We saw OB's importance last week because he knows essentially everything about the TVA. He built a lot of this stuff and he has all of the scientific wizardry that it'll take to figure out the solutions to these problems. But Casey is also... I think he's simultaneously like one of us as the audience, because he's kind of like sitting back and witnessing this stuff, but he's still intelligent enough and knows enough to be able to contribute and to add another perspective, because he's been like a receptionist. Yeah. But as a receptionist, you acquire a lot of information, like more information than most people probably would, because you're there every day ingesting and gaining a lot of that insight and information about how the TVA works and the different departments and who's who, just the things that a Hunter can't concern themselves with or a Mobius can't concern themselves with. Like, they probably heard of these things, but a receptionist is going to get that ground level day-to-day information that is just so crucial. And Casey's also funny, you know, too. He's very lovable and affectionate and funny. So I think it's a really great character. So I can't wait to see all of these five work together even more, because I know that they're going to be a big, big prominent factor as a unit as we continue to move forward through the season. But let's talk about the interrogation when Brad Wolf is ultimately captured and brought back to the TVA. They're trying to get some information out of him. They're trying to figure out the whereabouts of Sylvie. And he just flips the script on them, because he already knows what this whole game is. He knows that there's a good cop, bad cop situation. Mm-hmm. He's done this. He's been a Hunter. So it's not really working on him. And he says some pretty dark shit to the characters in the room, specifically to Loki and Mobius. I want to start with Loki specifically. He says to him, quote, "You're just trying to make up for all the terrible, awful shit you've done in your life, you pathetic little man. At the end of the day, you just make everything worse," end quote. This kind of calls back to some of the things that Mobius was telling Loki in season one when Loki was first brought to the TVA. I remember Mobius telling Loki that you really only exist to make other people great. You only exist to advance the missions and to help people eventually find out their greatest purpose, right? And that's ultimately what led to the assembling of the Avengers, and that Loki's a loser and he's destined to be a loser. And we see that Brad Wolf here is saying a lot of the same stuff, but he's much more frank with it. He just calls him pathetic. He's calling him all sorts of stuff. And it looks like it's having an effect on Loki, but Loki is also kind of weirdly playing it off, and he wants to hear more. He wants to hear everything that Brad Wolf has to say. It's a bit hard to read at times as to whether or not Loki believes what he's saying and whether or not he feels like it's true or if he's actually evolved as a person. You know, what did you think about just hearing all of that stuff again, Loki's reaction to it, and just, you know, really the development of him as a character, just knowing that, again, the real, I think, narrative thrust of the show, really the purpose is to track that trajectory about his evolution as a villain initially to becoming an anti-hero to maybe even just becoming a full-fledged hero within the season and maybe in future projects.
Man, first, shout out to the performances in the scene, bro. Rafael Casal specifically and Tom Hiddleston were going crazy. I was like, okay, is this TV, you know what I mean? This is the acting and kind of feel that I love to see, man. But man, that this idea that when Loki is hearing these things, like you said, it's really hard to tell if it's getting under his skin or not. It's really hard to tell how he feels about all of it. But what I will say is that he did not react how Mobius reacted, and it makes me feel like Loki has grown. Right? I feel like season one Loki might have done something, might have hit. You know,
oh, he was pissed when Mobius basically told him all that. He couldn't accept it. You know, he still tried to escape and all of that.
Exactly. And so I have to say he has grown. I think maybe it got to him a little bit, right? Because the only reason I say that is because the torture that he goes through is kind of crazy. I was like,
he had a receipt for that ass.
Hey,
for
bro,
sure.
I thought an arm was going to break or like something was going to happen in that little box that he was in. I was like, okay, you felt a little something, but I think that reactionary part of Loki is slowly fading away. Loki being very self-aware in that moment, right? And him saying, you're right about a lot of the things I was, or him even talking to Mobius, and Mobius saying he acted off of emotion. He was like, man, I literally led an alien invasion in the middle of New York and I kicked Iron Man through a window. Like, this dude was saying all of these things, you know what I mean? He was being very vulnerable and very open about how he felt in that moment and during the events of the Avengers, and being like, yeah, you're right. And I think that self-awareness, again, makes me feel like Loki has grown past a lot of those places what's the name? X5? Yes. That X5 makes it seem like he's still in that. And so, again, a lot of this show, and Loki in general, is a big existentialism, you know, kind of cool TV show. But I think Loki is realizing in slow motion that it really is actions that determines who you are to be, not necessarily, you know, who you will remain. And so I feel like he's seeing that, and that is what is helping him slowly become a hero, at least in this moment. Again, he was a villain, then he was like anti-hero, but in this moment he's trying to save the world. And so I do kind of feel like he is slowly evolving to a new and different Loki, and I think that's pretty cool.
It's smart to make us continue to ask those questions as well, right? Because there might be some viewers out there who haven't fully bought into the transformation or the evolution, because we have to remember that this version of Loki is not the same Loki that we saw in Infinity War. This Loki is fresh off of the alien invasion of New York. He's fresh off of the Battle of New York, where he just tried to murder all the Avengers and basically take over Earth as his own dominion, you know? So this guy is still relatively, I think, sort of early in a stage of maturation and progression from where he was. And so I think it's smart to still include these questions here to know that, yeah, he's not all the way there, because none of this type of work internally and emotionally that needs to be done can be done overnight. Like, that's by no means the case. And we don't really have a great sense of time and how much time has passed in the events of this show. But I think it's easy enough to say that in the time that he's been in the TVA and that he's been working with the TVA, he has had a tremendous amount of growth to where we even saw him last season, because he did not react the same, you know, and he was a little bit more cerebral in his approach. Yeah, you know, I think last season he would have just had an outburst like we saw. He would have just lunged at him like Mobius very much did in the very next scene. And instead he was like, you know what? we'll let you have that. We're going to go have a talk, have some key lime pie. And when I come back, I got that receipt for your ass. And that's what he did, you know, very much more strategic and cerebral in his approach. And early versions of Loki and Thor and Thor the Dark World and Avengers, like he was, I think, much more of an irrational and erratic at times type of individual who would kind of act off of impulse. And we see that that's just not really the case here. So I love that small subtlety, you know. And Tom Hiddleston, he had a quote to Marvel.com. He said, you know, maybe the season is more about the burden and less about the glory in his purpose as a character, where, you know, season one was kind of about that self-awareness. So I think we see that, you know, he's gone through the self-awareness stage and now he's kind of holding who he was in the past. And that is a burden to carry that knowledge, to know that, damn, I was a piece of shit. You know, I did some very terrible things, but I have to own that. I have to accept that and take accountability, but now I have to move forward.
Yeah.
Now, conversely, Mobius, not quite there. Seems like he got a little bit more to work on, because Brad turns his attentions to Mobius, starts to get into all the stuff behind the scenes about Mobius's past life. And don't you want to know who you were? Don't you? Mm-hmm. Don't you feel angry and upset that your life was stolen from you? Look what I did. I went to go make movies. I'm having a great time before you all kidnap me. Doesn't that get under you, that you're just living this life, this fake life in the TVA, and you might have a family, you might have a wife, you might have kids? Like, go see that, but you're scared. You don't want to take that leap. And obviously that definitely gets under Mobius's skin. He gets physical with Brad, tries to play it off, says like, I got it all under control, it was a tactic, but later admits, once he's having the pie with Loki, it was not a tactic. Like, obviously it did bother him. And so we started to get clues in season one about Mobius's interests and who he was before the TVA. They're obviously leaning a lot more into it. I think the jet ski clue is still out there. We're still trying to figure out, like, yeah, was Mobius like a huge jet skier or something like that? But, you know, what did you think about the interaction between him and Loki and having that realization that, you know, he's accepting his place here, and he's kind of, I guess, fearful to see what his life might be like on the outside, because it could potentially be a great one.
Yeah, man. First, a pie room is crazy. Like, what? It's just a room.
Just a room of pies.
A bunch of pie just sitting out. This thing is crazy. And second of all, why is it so green? Like, key lime pie does not look like that. Where did they get that from? I'm trying to figure out. Like, even if it's good, that cannot. I just don't know why it looks like that. It looks so crazy. It's actually green. I don't. Man, that was another question I had. But, man, them harping on, again, this existentialism thing, man, is really cool to me, and kind of pulling out these pieces of Mobius that we all have questions about, even himself, is so interesting, especially when he says, if it's something bad that my old life contained, right, I can handle that. But if it was something good, I don't know if I can handle that, because you telling me the TVA took me out of something good? And I do have a feeling that it was like the happiest life ever. Mobius was a freaking, he had a family, his daughter and his wife, and they went on a boat trip and he was out there jet skiing. You know what I mean? I think that's that, because that's what they make it feel like, right? I'm sure they have, there probably is some plot twist in there about what Mobius really was doing on the timeline. I'm sure it's coming eventually, but that's what they make it seem like. And I love that idea that I wouldn't be able to handle that life being good, because how could you take that away from me, right? If it's a bad life, who cares? I'm in jail. You kidnapped me to be in the TVA? Hell yeah.
I had a bid. I had 10 years left. Like, hell yeah. Yeah, please.
I would love to be at the TVA. And so, but it's so interesting, because everyone is asking Mobius, like, why wouldn't you want to look? And I really can't blame him for the answer that he's given, though. Spending thousands and thousands of years, man, in this place that there has no concept of time, then you being able to say, oh, no, I had a happy different life. Because you could argue, really, not until Loki showed up, there was no excitement in Mobius's life, right? Like, there was not much going on, you know, which is why I think he's so keen to these adventures with Loki. You know what I mean? I think he likes him as a friend, and he's opening up to Loki and things like that, and vice versa. And it's becoming an interesting story about what it means to exist in certain planes, and what you want your life to look like. And so I wonder what it'll be like once, because I feel like they can't ask this question, right, of where was Mobius, and then them not show us. I feel like they'll show us eventually. And so I can't wait to see maybe where his life might have lied on the sacred timeline. But I love, like you said, that character work of everybody starting to open up, and we're starting to figure out where people's heads are, because man, I think Mobius had some, again, some real answers when it came to being asked a lot of these questions.
Yeah, I mean, he's the walking embodiment of again, that reference I made earlier, the Matrix, Cyrus. Like, ignorance is bliss. I'm good. I don't need to know mm-hmm. what's going on in the real world because I built a life here. And I like it. He says it. He's like, Loki, I like it. You know, he's there enjoying the pie. He's obviously really, really good at his job. He's a leader in the TVA. And so one has to understand just the place that he's in. And because it has been thousands and thousands of years for him, that's a hard thing to all of a sudden break away from and to deal with the reality that everything you've been doing has not been something necessarily because of your own making. It's because somebody just plopped you out of one place and put you into another, and they've created a situation for you. And that's a really crazy thing. And it got me thinking, like, have the lives that we've seen outside of the TVA with the people and the employees, it hasn't been many, but have any of them been that great? I remember in season one, we saw Ravonna Renslayer's alternate life. It looked like she might have been like a school principal or something like that, or a guidance counselor. I don't remember if we saw Hunter B-15's life. I know she got the information revealed to her, and obviously she, you know, she came to and realized, like, oh, you know, I had a life before this. I don't know if we saw that, but then there was that other hunter that Sylvie was having dinner with in season one, and Sylvie was like trying to, you know, sort of do some mind control, and it seemed like she had just an ordinary life. I don't know if it was amazing per se, but they've been very guarded with their approach about how much they show us in terms of what type of lives people live outside of this, you know, this reality, you know. So to your point about what is Mobius's life, they absolutely have to show us, but man, I do wonder if, you know, if the majority of these lives are just kind of ordinary, uneventful, mundane lifestyles. And maybe the TVA work, as dangerous as it is, might be some of the most exciting things that they've done. Do you have any thoughts about, you know, what that might have looked like and just their approach in terms of keeping that super guarded at this point?
Man, I really don't know. Part of me even feels like at this point that they purposely chose, or he who remains purposely chose successful people or seemingly happy and successful people, right? Only because we haven't got a glimpse of anybody that has been down in the dumps or that has been, you know, maybe not doing life so well yet. And I think, you know, it's like that because let's say you wipe somebody's memory, they have to have the skills and the tools in order to operate something as crazy as the TVA. And I think that's kind of one of my thoughts behind it is like, man, we need capable people. So let's wipe the minds of capable people and put them in the TVA. And I'm thinking maybe that's why they are holding some of those things so close to the chest. Also, my other thought is that everybody, all will be revealed to all of the employees here very soon. And they're kind of saving some of those moments for when that happens. Like, oh, here are our big characters and where they are, what they used to do. Versus like, you know, some of the smaller people we haven't even met in the TVA. Part of me feels like they're saving like a little montage or a little thing with different moments in which that happens. So that's kind of what I think.
Yeah, potentially so. I mean, there's a lot more people we're having relationships with now, so that could be a really impactful moment. You know, because on one hand, the work in the TVA has been important and it has been eventful and it's dangerous. Obviously, it's manufactured and it's not real, but if they have like these ordinary lives, like what is that going to be like? Like, how are they going to react to like, oh, I was just like a construction worker on Earth. Like, that's what I did. That's true. I don't know. You know, I don't know if that's what I would want to go back to. I mean, I think there's probably a lot more Mobiuses out there than we might think, you know, that are kind of like, I'm good here. You know, it might be that thing, you know, and I'd be interested to see.
And B-15, she just made, you know, the simplest point where it's like, it should just be their choice. And I think that's really it. Or literally first episode, she was like, regardless, we have to tell them. And I think that's the thing out of all of this. If B-15 knows and continues to work for the TVA, that's her choice. If, you know what I mean? If Mobius knows, continues to work for a TVA, that's his choice. But I think that's the thing. Giving people first the information of where they come from is important. And then being able to say, you have a choice to stay here or not, given the information that you have. And so we obviously understand somebody like Brad Wolf /X5 would go back to Earth and live his life as a movie star. But everyone might not be in that camp. People like Mobius might stay, but it's that choice that matters.
No, no doubt. Imagine if Brad Wolf was like a porn star instead. He definitely would have hopped at that too. He'd have been like, oh, that's the movies I'm making, bet.
He said, no, I'm out of here.
I'm going for that. Let's talk about Sylvie. She comes back in a big way in this episode. We had a lot of questions about McDonald's in Tulsa, Oklahoma. What the fuck is going on with that? And we get a little bit more information, but ultimately, low-key, Moby is Hunter B15. They're able to find Sylvie in Tulsa at this McDonald's, and they also take Brad Wolf alongside with them in the adventure. And you get this very, very interesting interaction between Loki and Sylvie. They have not truly seen each other, not in a real way, since the events of the season one finale, in which we just saw the rift really established between the two. You know, they finally reached the end of time. They found He Who Remains. Sylvie, her life's purpose was pretty much fulfilled in that moment. And she felt betrayed by Loki because he wanted to just like take a moment to really think about what they were going to do and think about the consequences. And this kind of reminds me of that moment where it's like you run into an ex that you probably haven't seen in a long time. And it's like, oh, this is awkward as fuck. What do I say to this person that I have not seen? And you got one person who's probably still a little bit angry about how things went down. And then you got the other person who's just trying to like focus on the moment right now. They're just trying to be like, hey, how you doing? What's up? Are you good? And I think that that's what's represented here, because Sylvie, her face dropped so quickly when Loki walked into that McDonald's. She was not happy. And Loki obviously is very much trying to get through to her and make her realize the importance of just everything that's happening, and to understand that there are bigger forces at play. Obviously, you know, her actions didn't really end anything. It kind of kickstarted a lot of shit that they're now having to deal with. What did you think about just those opening moments to see Sylvie, her reaction to seeing Loki there, and then just the conversation that they also had afterwards? The, you know, the fact that Sylvie was like, look, I don't want anything to do with the TVA. I've done what I needed to do. I don't want to help you. My mission is fulfilled. I'm happy here. Let's move on. And you know, on the opposite side, obviously, Loki is trying to sort of win her services back over.
Hey, yo, Sylvie is insane, because like she wreaked havoc in this whole season of this TV show through the TVA. She's the reason there's times going all over the place right now. And then she wants to go work at McDonald's, bro. And then expected to be left alone. Like, that's your expectation, is that nobody's going to come looking for you?
Let me ask you this. What's more wild, her doing that or Thanos literally wiping out half of humanity and going to a random remote planet and chilling and starting a career of gardening right after he does it?
Farming and gardening, bro. Hey, both of them are nuts, man. At least Thanos had like a sense of retirement. You know what I mean? Like, Sylvie was like, I'm finna go flip these burgers, my nigga. Like, I'm finna go take orders at McDonald's. Like, why is that your plan of action? They're both kind of insane, but Sylvie's is just slightly more insane because she still got to work. Like, why are you working? You are a whole god of mischief. Why are you doing any of this? It's so crazy. But yeah, man, it's funny that they literally had to pull up to this McDonald's of this girl working the front desk at McDonald's. And it's I love how I guess how kind of stale she is, right? When she first sees Loki, it's almost like, for a second, it's almost like she pretended like she didn't even know who he was. Even though they were like staring at each other, it was almost like, so you gonna order or what? Like, you want some nuggets, bro? Like, what do you want? I really love that interaction. But for the conversation that happens after, mainly, man, it's really like I don't know exactly what Sylvie expected 100%. Like, now that she knows the stakes of everything, right? Now that Loki has told her the stakes of everything and she's seen for herself, it's very interesting to me how quickly I think she had to jump back in and felt like she could jump back in, right, to this sort of thing. But man, the conversations they were having was like, Loki's like, look, you won't have any of this if you don't help us right now. Sure, you may have messed up some stuff. Sure, you may have accomplished your life goals. But now, none of that still doesn't matter. Even the decision you just made will still not matter if you don't come help us right now. And I think that's a heavy thing to put on somebody's shoulders. Again, as much as she wanted to be left alone, I was like, nah, you don't get to just do all this and kind of let it go by. I feel like that from a writing standpoint, personally. I kind of would have been upset if it was like, whoop, Sylvie's not in the story anymore. She did all this, and now she gets to go chill and work at McDonald's. I'm like, no, you cannot. You know what I mean? Like, there's just no way they're going to write this like this. And so I love, again, her involvement and Loki having to give her the real, man. And it's also interesting because even in that moment, the conversations they're having, none of it is really about their relationship, you know what I mean, or how they feel about each other, anything like that. It's about Loki's about that business. When he pull up, he's like, look, I don't know what this is, what we got going on, but this is the real, and this is what we need to do in order to save whatever your job at McDonald's. This is what we got to do. And so again, I'm sure it'll come up in these next couple episodes, but part of me loves that Loki was like, skip all this, I'm trying to save the world and we'll figure that shit out later. And so yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, she's still so raw about what happened. She's obviously, I think, kind of blinded by the rage of just the moment and the sense of betrayal that she went, you know, with Loki. I mean, she was already a very hardened individual when they met. Like, she was not having any of Loki's antics. She didn't want to work together with him. She didn't want to open up. But slowly, like, Loki's charm and his relatability to her, obviously the fact that they are both Lokis, they were able to really establish something, a meaningful relationship, and something that eventually grew to be what felt like it was romantic as well. And I think that, you know, she had her heart broken. Essentially, that's what it came down to. She probably, for a quick second, and maybe the only moment in her life, found somebody that she could actually open up and be vulnerable to. And then simultaneously at the same time, in the midst of probably the most traumatic experience of their lives, confronting He Who Remains, like, this is like their destiny staring themselves in the eye. She all of a sudden feels like that this person that she opened up to is backstabbing her. And she decides to take matters into her own hands. And so there's a lot to Sylvie. She's incredibly complex and layered. I know a lot of us can sit back and be like, yo, what the fuck are you doing? Not only did you fuck shit up in season one by making the decision that you made, which is going to cause possibly a multiversal war, but now you're being hard-headed about wanting to come back and help out the TVA and trying to do what you're, you know, what we think is right in order to fix this mess. But her mindset is, and we hear it at the end of the episode, the TVA is the problem. This is literally the source of the issue. None of this would be happening if the TVA didn't exist to begin with. The pruning of the timelines, these lives being slaughtered and killed and wiped out of existence, us having to even, you know, sort of reconcile all of this to begin with, all these questions, all this uncertainty. That's her mindset, which I think has to certainly be taken into consideration. Like, that's very valid. Like, what the fuck is the TVA? Why does it exist? Like, if we're just assuming He Who Remains is telling the absolute truth, then okay, there is some I think reasonability to the existence of it. But the fact that, you know, what we talked about earlier, you're taking people from their lives and wiping their minds and essentially having them operate under a false pretense, which is what they tried to do with her, and she wasn't having it. You know, they took her as a young girl and, you know, tried to prune her out of existence. And so I get it. I get why she is so upset and mad. But low-key on the opposite side, as you said, we got to get through to that right now. We got to cut through all of that. We don't have time to talk about this stuff. We don't have time to unpack your feelings, because the urgency is now. The moment is literally now. And we saw it was indeed now, because right after this, we finally do find out, you know, the whole plan from General Docs. We had a lot of questions last week about what her motivations were. We saw her take a ton of agents and go to who knows where. And clearly it was meant to be something that we were suspicious of. And we saw that that was the case. Essentially, she was going to undermine the judge's rules that were laid down last week and prune all of these branches in the timeline, effectively killing billions and billions and billions of people. And we get a really, really emotionally charged scene at the end of this. It's preceded by an action scene where Loki and Mobius and Sylvie have to go prevent this from happening any further. But it's too little too late, really. I mean, they are able to prune a ton of timelines, and we get to see all of the TVA employees. We get to see Hunter B-15 and Mobius and Loki react to this in real time. Like, I feel like in the past, in season one, when we saw or heard about timelines being pruned, it was just like a throwaway line. It didn't mean anything. But now you actually get to understand the horrificness of it, just like how crazy it is. Like, all of these people's lives and existence are just kind of being wiped out without any sort of consideration. And it's a really, I think it's an emotional scene, and it's one that definitely delivers kind of the point of the show and really the conflict of where we probably are going for the rest of the season. So what did you think about just seeing all of this unfold, seeing the reveal of General Dox's plans, and then, of course, just the reaction to it on the part of all the TVA employees?
Yeah, I love the lead up to it. I love how we was all like, nah, or they purposely, you know, planted that Easter egg for us to be like, nah, this cannot be all just for Sylvie. And I love how we all bought into that, but none of us knew the details of exactly what was going on. And I think it's interesting because even though I knew it was something not good, I for some reason did not foresee it being to this degree of purging all of these timelines and killing all of these people? Because then by the end of it, when they pretty much succeed, you know, for the most part, like, we're able to save a couple of the timelines, but for the most part, to see the Doc's pretty much succeeded in a lot of her plan, and you go back to the TVA and see everyone so sad, and B-15 being like, those are all people, and the way she says it, you watch all the lines disappear in slow motion, and it's dead quiet in the TVA, is a crazy emotional moment. Like, it was sad, and it wasn't, again, it was not a lot of dialogue in that moment. We were made to sit in it. We were made to be sad. There's a lot of things that happens in these some of these MCU projects and shows that we don't always get to sit in the sadness, right? That's what makes Infinity War so crazy. It's like, well, we lost and we sat in it for a year. You know what I'm saying? Like, we sat in it for a very long time. And so it was just a very emotional moment, man. It was like, damn, they really won this time. I love that action too. I love that Sylvie and Loki had to do the hold hand thing. She was like, don't read too much into it. And just grabbed your hand and whatever explodey thing. I still don't know what to call that thing. It's like the Loki. I have no idea. Loki lash. That's my new name for it just now. It's the Loki lash.
Trademark that.
I should. But it's cool, man. It's cool. It's just cool to see where it feels like there was a real villain, real conflict, in real heroism happening. Although we lost in that moment, it feels like, damn, like, no, this is still a comic book TV show. And so the moment sucked and it was very emotional, but it felt like I was watching something worthwhile, if that makes sense. Even though we lost. And so I'm interested, if anything, to see where they go from here. Cause Loki, it feels like, okay, what's next? Like, she purged hella people. Like, this wasn't like a normal thing. Like, they said she killed billions of people. Easily, just off of that. So again, I don't know where we go, but man, I just know the opening of episode 3 is gonna be sad, because it's already still sad right now.
Yeah, unlike the other Marvel shows where it's 6 episode seasons, and by episode 2, the end of episode 2, I'm like, all right, well, you know, we don't got that much time. It's time to probably pick up the pace. I don't have any feelings about that, because it's like the pace has been picked up significantly, because in episode 2. Mm-hmm. The conflict is there. The stakes have been risen incredibly high. We have just wiped out billions and billions of people at the hand of General Dox, and she did it mercilessly. Like, she didn't give a fuck at all. And she even says at the end, like, our plan has been compromised. Like, they had more to do. They weren't finished. Like, they were going to prune more timelines. And that's a crazy thing to think about. And as you said, just the reactions of everybody in the TVA. I mean, I just love, you know, sort of the conflict and the differentiating opinions between the moment that's happening and Sylvie literally inside the TVA saying the TVA is rotten. It's broken. It needs mm-hmm. to be, it needs to be finished. It needs to end. And then you have Loki, who has almost like become like a full-fledged TVA employee at this point, saying like, well, no, that probably doesn't need to happen, because this is probably the only line of defense that we have against Kang the Conqueror. Like, this nothing else can take him on. So when you're dealing with that and you're seeing all of these lives just evaporate in front of you, that's a pretty heady idea that I think that they're starting to unpack a crazy, wild sci-fi concept. Like, this organization that's been systematically broken for so long, can they be good? Can they do good things? Or is the leadership just too affected at all of the history and all of the stuff that's been done to them? And the fact that as we know,
look at you.
Uh-oh, there you go. Yep. No, I mean, that's it right there. Like, what level of good can they do? You know, just knowing that there is stuff that's fundamentally not right with the organization as a whole, you know, and Dox is a character. She said it last week. Them knowing that the timekeepers weren't real, she said, this changes nothing. This doesn't do anything. Like, we keep forward. We continue with our mission. And she denied a direct order from her superior. And we saw what that resulted into with the loss of billions. And so I think it's an incredible conflict to deal with, because it feels like the TVA might be around to stay. Like, they might be a really, really impactful and important presence. And it made me think, like, with this larger, like, multiverse saga, phase 4, phase 5, phase 6.
Yeah.
Does it not feel like the TVA should not just be the focal point of all of this? It hasn't really been at this point so far. It has been in Loki, obviously. But as we think about Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, we still don't necessarily know what that's going to look like. But
Yep.
Why not the TVA? Why isn't the TVA just a central focal point of all of this? Because I think better than any other property that we've seen up until this point, Loki is a series and TVA is a construct and as an idea within what we're doing with the multiverse has worked out tremendously better than all the other stuff that we've seen reinvented over and over again. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I feel like I hinted at that, you know, in our last when we're talking about episode one, man, because it really is this big concept of time. I feel like just needs again, it just needs a vehicle, man. It needs when you talk about time, there has to be some kind of construct for everyone to look over and say, okay, those are the rules. And it feels like the TVA can very much carry that out. The TVA can very much say, okay, it's time for Secret Wars. This is everything that needs to happen in Secret Wars. And the TVA has shepherded in all of those ideas. It has given us the rules about time. It has given us the rules about maybe eventually incursions, right? It has given us the rules about what it means to purge timelines, to whatever, and all of these things. And you know, you speak about we might need the TVA, or Loki feels like we might need the TVA. It might be the thing to destroy Kang. It makes sense because a Kang variant created it. And a lot of times the thing that destroys is itself, right? The thing you needed to destroy is itself. And I think the TVA very much can be that, but it's about, you know, getting those weeds out and figuring out the way forward. And so that's what this season feels like, is the way forward. But I really, really hope that the TVA really is this thing that maintains throughout all of this, man. Not only that, TVA has a lot of really cool like stories in it, right? I'm still waiting on like when Doctor Strange messes up in the timeline somewhere and She-Hulk has to come be his lawyer in the TVA. Like, we have those pieces. They're literally there. You know what I'm saying? It just needs, everything needs to transpire. But I'm hoping that we can, that again, Marvel puts enough, I think, faith in Loki in the TVA as an organization in order to do that. And so I think one of my hopes, you know, something we talked about last episode, is that the TVA has to exist in like Deadpool in Wolverine, right?
Right.
Maybe that's our first test of like, can the TVA or the thought of the TVA exist in other Marvel projects that isn't Loki? Right, because we're really not talking about it outside of Loki right now. And so I'm hoping that movie is like, oh, it works here. Okay, now let's put it in the next project. Oh, let's put it in the project after that, because maybe we've been talking about the connectedness of the MCU. The TVA can very much just be that, the connectedness, because it's so chaotic in the TVA that I think it could be organized chaos, right? And that's where the TVA could lie. That could be our through line. That's our controller adapter. Plug in, everything plugs into the TVA. And that's how we all get to sit down and understand what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's what they did with S.H.I.E.L.D. in phases one and two. Like, S.H.I.E.L.D. was literally everywhere. S.H.I.E.L.D. was the organization that brought all of that stuff together. TVA in and of itself is an organization. And similar to S.H.I.E.L.D., a broken organization that has people that have infiltrated the organization and that are operating under false pretenses and have ulterior motives. Like, it's the same thing, but you're dealing with time and multiverses and all that different stuff. It's like, how have we not seen the TVA and other properties up until this point? You know, it's kind of crazy amongst like 20 things that have been released in phase four. So I do hope, you know, in future projects, hopefully Deadpool 3, phase 5, phase 6, maybe the TVA will take more prominence. Perhaps season 2 of Loki had to be the thing that occurred to get us there. Perhaps we have to fix the TVA as best as we can so that it can be that organization that moves forward in other properties. But I'll be interested to see if they carry forth, you know, sort of that momentum of what they've built here and hopefully establish some other connecting pieces. And also they have a device. The temp pad is like very much a thing that allows anybody to go anywhere. And we saw at the end of this episode that Sylvie does still indeed have a temp pad. She can go back to Tulsa. She can go to the end of time. She can go to the TVA. She can go wherever she wants to go. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, sort of that last shot that focuses on her is kind of telling of where we might see her go for the rest of the series. Any last thoughts about how this episode impacts the rest of the season, or where we might go in episode 3, 4, 5, 6 as we continue on with this journey?
Man, I think the next questions, right, now that we have found Sylvie, is our three big characters that's missing, bro. It's time to talk about He Who Remains / Kang. It's time to talk about Renslayer, and it's time to talk about Miss Minutes, man. people don't like Miss Minutes. I don't know why. I think it's, it might be Tara Strong's fault. It might be the character. She's hella creepy, but also like hella cool looking to me. I don't know. I really just want to see Miss Minutes on whatever side of all that she's in. But there's a huge story between He Who Remains or Kang the Conqueror and Renslayer. Again, if you don't know it, go look it up. They've been like in love forever in comics. But it's an important story that I think is going to matter in this series of Loki, man. And so that is kind of the stuff I'm looking forward to. I'm looking for all the weird nitty gritty stuff when it comes to their relationship. And again, how Miss Minutes ties into all this. And we got to see Victor Timely at some point. So yep. Hey, it's time to get to the nitty gritty. Like you said, this episode very much, I can't call it a filler. A lot went down. I can't call it a filler, but it very much gave us a lot of context and a lot of story to push the narrative. It gave us a lot of plot in this episode to kind of say, all right, we laid some groundwork. Now let's get to it in these next four episodes. So I'm just looking forward to, again, seeing those three characters that I talked about and really the adventures of Mobius and Loki, man. I'm excited to see what happens.
I'm very much in alignment with the Ravonna Renslayer, He Who Remains Kang connection. There was that audio recording in the last episode. Mm-hmm. We can hear them talking to each other. And so I'm like, oh, what's that? Like, that obviously is going to come back around. They're going to probably, that might be episode 5. We actually sort of resolve whatever that is. But they are clearly leaning into that, their relationship with each other and what that might look like. I mean, I would love to see, I don't know if we're going to see it, but I would love to actually see the origin of the TVA. Like, the exact start of it.
A throwback episode, please.
Oh, man, that would be incredible. See He Who Remains literally build this, how he meets Ravonna or Mobius. Like, that could all answer the questions we're asking about these past lives and their relationships with each other and just all of that stuff. I think it'd be really, really enlightening. So I hope that they go down that territory later in the season. But folks, those are all of our thoughts about the second episode of season 2 of Loki. If you've checked out the latest episode, definitely hit us up and let us know what you think. And with that being said, that's going to do it for this episode of Two Black Nerds. Thank you all so much again for tuning into another podcast. We will, of course, be back next week to talk about episode 3 of the Marvel Studios original series Loki. All the theories, all the key events, all the specific things that go down. So definitely be on the lookout for that. And if you have not done so already, go check out our 2-part episode about the state of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was a part of our 4-year 200th episode celebration that is available right now to go watch on YouTube and or listen to on your favorite podcast platform. But until then, we will see y'all next time.
Yes, sir. We are Audi 5000. Please check out our 2 Black Sith and 2 Black Jedi collection at 2blacknerds.com. And remember, always bet on black. Appreciate y'all. Love y'all. Thank you for listening to another episode of Two Black Nerds, where we're too black,
too nerdy.
We out, y'all. Peace. Playing hardballs with the platinum visa. Is that your car? The SKA? Are you riding alone? Can I be your date? Come get me. Get me. Don't diss me. Don't trick me. Got some friends. Can they come too? Can you hook them up with some boys like you? A hot boy.